Today, we're honored to have House Speaker Scott Sike join us for the first half of our show today. Good morning, Speaker.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Catherine.
You know, I should let our listeners know that we did initially invite both you and Senate President Ron Cochi in at the beginning of session. You both agreed to come into our studios to take questions from our listeners, but unfortunately, we were preempted by the impeachment trial. But I thank you for taking part today.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me today.
You know, at the beginning of session in your speech, you talked about how since 2016, 12,000 residents have left Hawaii. And I know we were hearing stories anecdotally, but I just know in my circle, I know of two former colleagues who are packing it up at the end of this month. They're selling their homes and are moving to the mainland. And I also know of, I believe, two nurses. One, I think, has been there for like 40 years. She has moved to Vegas, and the other one is also planning to move there as well. You are obviously concerned about this departure of our residents.
Yes, Catherine, we're very concerned. And, you know, as I mentioned in my opening day speech, it's at the point now where all of us know someone or are related to someone who is moving from Hawaii to another state, and largely because of for economic reasons. I mean, it's impacting every family at this point in Hawaii, and that's why the legislature worked on this over the summer. So last year, the Hawaii Community Foundation and the Aloha United Way teamed up to publish a report. It's called the ALIS Report, and it's basically a report that documents and provides data on the financial circumstances of Hawaii families. And one of the findings in that report is that 47% of Hawaii households cannot make ends meet. And this 47% represents 214,000 households in Hawaii. This report really, you know, sent shockwaves through the legislature, combined with the out-migration statistics that you mentioned. This is the second consecutive year of out-migration from Hawaii. But this created a shockwave at the legislature because, and it's almost as if it's at a tipping point where we knew that we had to do something. And so the House and the Senate worked together over the summer on a package of legislation that we believe will directly address and help Hawaii families. There are four parts to our package. One is an income package that consists of a minimum wage and a tax credit, increased tax credits. The second is an early education proposal. The third is a school facilities construction program. And the fourth is developing more affordable housing.
And you live in Kaka'ako, and I don't know what you see from the building, you know, where you live, but we often hear stories about how in the evenings you look at these luxury high-rises and like half of them are dark.
Yeah, it's very troubling. And, you know, that is one of the reasons why in 2014, when the Hawaii Community Development Authority, HCDA, began to approve permits for some of these high-rises. And, you know, I mean, and please remember that there's a number of high-rises in Kaka'ako today that were not built in 2014. They were not existent in 2014. A number of them have been built just over the past 5 years. But in 2014, you know, we led a community effort against HCDA because we felt that HCDA was just ramrodding and rubber stamping these development applications in Kaka'ako. And that was one of the concerns that we raised. And that's something that I've always mentioned, which is that Kaka'ako is an area under state jurisdiction. The state of Hawaii, the state taxpayers, paid for all of the infrastructure in Kaka'ako. And so whenever development occurs in this area, the question that we need to ask first and foremost is, how will this development benefit all of Hawaii's residents and all of Hawaii's taxpayers? There is a broader purpose to Kaka'ako. It should be a mixed-use area. It should not be an area that just assists those, you know, with a lot of financial means. There is a broader purpose to that area. And this ties into the approach that we've taken in our affordable housing package this year. Our package is designed to accelerate the construction of units that will help the middle class, the middle income gap group in Hawaii. And so many of our programs are geared towards the lower income level, but it's left out the middle group. And our package is designed to build more houses for the middle group. And the typical example that we give is, you know, a family that consists of two teachers or a police officer and a teacher, or two government workers. I mean, that is often what you find within the gap group. And we need to provide a relief to those residents.
We know that the lawmakers do want to accelerate housing, affordable housing along the rail route. You folks are looking at UH West Oahu, also other lands, state land that could be developed quickly.
Yes, we want to take advantage of underutilized state land. One of the premises behind rail was the hope that it would lead to housing development along the rail line. And, you know, the legislature decided this year that we would take this on, that we would really up the ante for development in those areas that stretch from Kalaeloa all the way down through West Oahu and Waipahu, all the way down there. We need to develop more houses along the rail line. You know, the bulk of the land that is adjacent to the rail line is state land, and we need to take advantage of that.
You know, we did solicit questions from our listeners. We did get one this morning or over the weekend who had a question about the issue that we were talking about earlier about retirement.
Hello, my name is Christine. I'm from Honolulu. There is a retirement savings crisis in Hawaii. People are not saving enough to allow them to live here without government support, and Social Security is not enough to live on either. Does the House support programs like Oregon Saves, Cal Savers, and Illinois Secure Choice that would make it easier for working families to save their own money to better their own futures and keep them out of poverty when they get older and retire? Thank you so much.
So what do you say to Christine, Speaker?
Okay, so thanks for that question. This is a proposal that was raised maybe about 2 years ago that would create a state agency that would run a retirement savings program. And the proposal that came in was to require employees to participate in this program. Funds would be automatically deducted from their paychecks and then placed into this retirement fund. It's a proposal that we spent a lot of time analyzing, and we did meet with the interest groups that were advocating for this proposal. At that point, we felt that a program like this, which was basically creating a state version of a Social Security program, we felt that for one thing it needs to be voluntary. Workers should not be required to participate because they may have other programs, savings programs in place already. So there were some questions that we had on some of the major elements of this proposal. It's something that we need to continue to analyze and to consider, because we do know that people are not saving enough for their retirement. And then when that happens, people become more reliant upon government services and government programs when they reach retirement age.
Yeah, if I recall right, I think it was Senator Laura Thielen who might have authored, I think, one of the early bills on this issue. What's your sense? Do you think that the lawmakers will in both houses will come together on this?
I'm not sure if it will happen this year. This is something that would happen at a future time. This year, the focus has really been on our package, the package that I described earlier, the education, housing, and the income package. That's been the focus this year between the House and the Senate.
Okay, we did get a number of questions via email. This one has to do with electric vehicle driver benefits, such as single occupancy HOV lane access, free metered parking, and free parking at state and county garages, which I believe is sunsetting June 30th, 2020. The question is, why did House Speaker Psyche kill House Bill 2558, a measure which would have extended Act 168, by referring it to four committees, which essentially caused it to miss key legislative deadlines?
So we recognize the importance of promoting electric vehicles. There's going to be a point in time where hopefully all of the vehicles in Hawaii will be electric, or maybe hybrid vehicles. I myself have a hybrid car that I drive. A few years ago, the legislature enacted a statute that provided for free parking at the airports and in county parking stalls. It does sunset on June 30, 2020, in about 4 months. One of the issues there is that, at least with the airports, that the usage has increased. So the state airport system is losing revenue from this benefit. Over the last 2 years, just at Honolulu alone, at the Honolulu Airport, the amount of revenue loss has doubled from about $1.5 million a year to $3 million a year. There is a question whether or not the federal government will allow the state to continue a program like this, because, as you know, the federal government helps to subsidize airports, and there is a federal rule that says that if the state takes any actions to divert revenue from the airport system, then the federal government may withhold federal funding for airport improvements.
Do you think
that is one of the issues that has to be addressed?
Do you think we ought to just have electric cars pay something at the airport?
Well, if we provide incentives for electric vehicles, there are other alternatives that we could consider, and I've asked some of the organizations that are advocating for more incentives to come up with different ideas. I think that one incentive is to provide more charging facilities. I think there needs to be more charging facilities at lower costs to encourage people to have EVs. There are different ways to address this. Free parking is not the only way to incentivize EV users.
All right, we have another question that came in from Chris via email. Chris writes, "My child will be entering public school next year. I'm concerned the legislature isn't investing in our public school students. I understand there are a number of classrooms that don't have a real teacher teaching our kids. What will the impact of this be on the future prospects of our Hawaii children in our long-term economy? Shouldn't this be addressed first before the legislature rolls out the early childhood education for 3- and 4-year-olds, like what was announced in the joint package?"
So preschool and elementary and intermediate and high school go hand in hand, because as we know, the research shows that the more prepared children are when they enter kindergarten, then the more successful they'll be throughout their educational career. We currently have a gap group of children who are not able to participate in early learning programs, mostly for financial reasons, and that is why we have taken this up as a priority issue this year. And you know, and having said that, the legislature has always been supportive of public education spending. This is one of the top areas, one of the top program areas that we spend our tax dollars on. I know that each member of the legislature wants public schools to succeed. They want kids to succeed. It is always a priority area for us.
I know the teachers union, you know, really wants to find another way to help fund raises to retain the teachers we have and to recruit better quality teachers. Where are we at with some of those proposals?
Well, the Department of Education came in with a proposal this year that had been negotiated with the teachers union to help fund, to increase funding for teachers who are in the high turnover districts, and also a proposal to compress salaries for teachers who are at the higher and who have more seniority in the system. And there is legislation to address both of these areas. It does require funding. So it's an issue that the House and the Senate will have to take up. And the other thing is that, just as a general matter, compensation for public employees is something that is decided by the unions that represent public workers and the governor. So the governor and the public unions every 2 years negotiate salary increases for the members. If the governor and the union come to an agreement, then that proposal comes down to the legislature for funding. So our job is to fund agreements. And the legislature has always funded agreements that are sent down by the governor and the unions.
You know, we also have a number of bills that are being heard of the legislature about, what to do about early education. And I think the devil's in the details. You know, the bills have proposed moving that mission, I think, from, over to the Department of Housing and Human Services. So there's been a lot of back and forth about how do we best do what we want to do, which is to educate more of these, younger children to give them a better head start. Where do you sit on that?
So one of the reasons that we are now in this situation where people are leaving Hawaii and where people can't afford to leave here is because sometimes state government is too siloed and is not flexible. You know, the test of any organization, including state government, is whether it is flexible enough so that it can adapt to changing circumstances. And one of the issues that we have sometimes with our state agencies, I mean, although there's really hardworking people there, that sometimes these agencies are not flexible enough and are not doing enough to be proactive and to head off some of these issues that implode at some point. So that is why our early learning proposal is seeking to consolidate early learning programs under one agency. Right now we have several programs that are administered by different agencies. These functions need to be coordinated and consolidated under one entity that will take the lead.
So you're basically saying we need to move on this quickly.
Yes.
So whether it's creating a new agency or a new mission under a different agency, something's got to move. Something's got to be done.
We want to move because the legislature is willing to make the structural changes. We're willing to fund these programs. We're willing to help pave the way for implementation, but we do need the agencies to execute all of this for us.
Okay, and we have a couple of questions on minimum wage. Please ask Speaker Psyche why a minimum wage of $17 an hour is not part of the working families package, HB 2541. Almost half of our working families are on the edge of survival. Let's see. Apparently the bill is currently looking to raise the minimum to $13 an hour by 2024. Does the speaker really think this will provide the basics to our working family? Another question to piggyback on that from Dave. He says, given the high cost of living and the consensus that within the Democratic Party that the minimum wage should be at least $15, why has the House under your leadership been so hesitant to make a significant increase to this minimum wage?
So I just want to emphasize that the approach that we're taking is a package approach. We are not just addressing the minimum wage, but we are going to provide tax relief to this group of workers. So basically the proposal consists of not just an increase in the minimum wage, but also expansion of the earned income tax credit. We will be making our state earned income tax credit permanent and refundable. So as you know, the state earned income tax credit provides relief basically to working families, and it's an extension of the federal EITC. So we'll be making that permanent, and we'll be making it refundable, meaning that if the amount of the tax credit exceeds the person's tax liability, then they will receive that difference in the form of a refund. The second proposal that we have is to increase the food credit for this gap group. The credit will be increased $250 per exemption or per claimant. So, for example, for a family of four, the exemption would be $150 times four for a total of $600. You know, these are really significant tax proposals, because when you look at the numbers, currently there are 249 claims that are made for the food credit. 249,000 people in Hawaii receive the food credit. There are 55,000 people who claim the state earned income tax credit. So by increasing these two credits, we will be providing direct financial relief to working families.
So the approach is a multi-pronged approach to kind of take the edge off, as opposed to one pill that's going to solve the problem.
Yes, and what we've stated before when it comes to wages is that Hawaii law requires employers to provide medical insurance to workers who are working more than 19 hours a week. And the reality for employers is that the cost of this health benefit, this medical benefit, increases every year. The state insurance commissioner tells us that the average annual premium for a medical plan is about $7,000 a year. In about 10 years, the projection is that this cost will double.
Wow.
So that is a concern for us, because we don't want to see a situation where employers start to cut hours so that they can disqualify people from receiving medical insurance.
And I guess that kind of goes back to folks who think they can't afford to retire here and live here in Hawaii. If I could change subject matter here, Anya, I know red light cams has been a very contentious subject. I think, you know, you were around when this was just a hot topic at the legislature, but it appears to be just like sailing through.
Yeah, so actually I did introduce a bill this year to create a pilot red light program. And what I did was I basically volunteered my district, the Kakaako area, for this program because, you know, my district has three of the top most dangerous intersections on Oahu. And I feel that a red light camera would help to minimize accidents that occur in this area. This bill is still alive. It'll be heard by the House Finance. Well, it was heard by the House Finance Committee, so it'll cross over to the Senate. I would ask listeners to please call the prosecutor's office to encourage their support, because the prosecutor's office has been testifying against this legislation this year.
Yeah, but it's just interesting, just with the public outcry that we saw, you know, years back. So I guess we'll see what happens. You know, we only have a couple more minutes, Speaker. Anything else you'd like to underscore, just from where you sit?
I just wanted to emphasize again that the House and the Senate have worked, you know, together on a package that is addressed to the middle income group. We know that people are leaving Hawaii for financial reasons, and we want to stop that trend from increasing.
Yeah, it is a big problem, and hopefully as lawmakers work through in the next couple of months here during session, that you can come to a meeting of the minds and find some vehicles that you both can be comfortable with.
Yeah, and so far it's been very positive. The House and the Senate have been working together because both sides realize that we need to take action. We need to do something. We need to deliver some results this year.
All right. Thanks so much, Speaker. We really appreciate your time with us this morning.
Thanks, Catherine.
All right. That was House Speaker Scott Sike talking about key issues in play this session. The legislature is on a 5-day recess and is back in hearings on Thursday.